You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
We're joined by Tamaki Makaurau-based artist Hannah Lynch, who is a bit of a multi-hyphenate, but they've just released a debut album, Sycophant. It's our second debut album chat on this edition of Breakfast. How does it feel to be our second debut album coordinator this morning, Hannah?
It feels amazing. Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very, very glad to have you. You're based in the Big T, I believe. That's correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm not spreading misinformation here.
No, I am. I'm based in Tamaki.
Okay, epic. How are things up there for you right now?
Oh, you know, I definitely have I was born and raised here, so it's the love hate relationship of your most familiar place. Mm. I love Tamaki, but it's especially as it starts to get colder, I start to have a creeping sense of foreboding, doom. You know, I'm like, oh no, if winter comes again.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't really know what winter is, low-key.
I'm from
Invercargill.
Yeah.
No, I imagine it's still
not. I can't survive any colder, so.
No, fair enough. Oh my goodness. I've read that you played Kira Joy in the role of Jenny Penn, which is a terrifying horror movie, came out in 2024, set in an old folks' home. I love that film. Did you get briefed much about the story before you went into that?
That's so crack up that you found that. I love that. Actually, not so much. I mean, James Ashcroft, who directed that film, he was a teacher of mine at drama school, and so he just like called me one day and was like, hey, do you want to do this role in this movie? It's like a really, really, really small role, but he had like handpicked a bunch of practitioners that he was friends with to come and play these nurses. And I really didn't know anything, and I didn't really know anyone, but we shot, I think, in Rotorua, and so we like shot on location. We all stayed at this beautiful kind of hotel. We were like the geothermal hot pools, and I just had like the best time ever, because I would like get taken down there, lie in this hotel, eat delicious food, drink at night with Jeffrey Rush, go swimming, and then shoot like 45 minutes a day of this job. It was so good. And the movie's really good.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
It's so scary.
It's super, super scary. Because it's like, not only is it just as scary as a horror film, but I think it connects with a lot of fears people have about getting old. And, you know, retirement homes, I think, can be pretty disturbing for a lot of people.
It's not nice. You know. It's not nice to think about all of the people who are alone in these places.
Yeah, isolated, you know. Mm. Yeah. And it's funny that Tom Sainsbury is also in the film as a nurse.
He was in the film. I think, did I play with him? I think maybe I had, like, 2 days or something with him, but I literally find him so funny.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
That I could barely talk around him, because, you know, you're just kind of like grinning because you think that someone's so brilliant.
This new record, Sycophant, it's out now. It's your debut record. You've described it as a meditation on rediscovering spirituality after rejecting and being rejected by organized religion. Can I ask what creed, and when did you realize it wasn't for you and that they didn't really want you?
Oh, well, yeah, I was raised Christian, evangelical Christian.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's so complicated, isn't it? I'm queer, so that was tricky. That was sort of the kicker, I guess. And I knew that I didn't know that I was queer, but something was off. Quite young, so that experience alone kind of led me to just look at what my life was, all aspects of my life, and kind of interrogate them with a little bit of curiosity to try and figure out, like, you know, where the issue is the issue with me? Am I the problem? Is the issue in the environments that I'm in? Or just try and make sense of all of that. So it's not intended to be like necessarily a scathing review for everyone, but that is just that was my experience. And now that I'm older and I've sort of, the chip has gone off my shoulder a bit more, I think, I feel like I'm starting to think about these ideas and these places and these early experiences with a slightly softer gaze and thinking about spirituality through a bunch of different lenses and looking at the world and what people need in order to feel like they can keep going, they can live another day, what it means to be in community, and also, like, you know, the colonial process of kind of exporting Christianity across the world, and particularly, you know, Te Moana Nui Akiwa for my lineage. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of looking at that through a slightly different lens. I think a lot of the album is kind of that, moving on from the really angry part and going into a slightly more curious, but still kind of still through that experience.
Still kind of a critical lens. I mean, there's a pretty significant line that I felt really highlights the album's religious underpinnings from the title track, where you say, "God complains too much for your liking," which I thought was beautiful.
Yeah, that's a pretty scathing review, right? I like this line because it feels, I guess this is one of those things where sometimes I feel like I want to say the thing that I know I shouldn't say, or I fear I'm not allowed to say, to check if I can say it.
Mm.
And then to be freed from the idea that there are things that are not appropriate, that there are parts of myself that are not appropriate to express. And I think this line in particular is a really, like, a big swing at that, where it's kind of like, I'm just going to say the worst thing I can and see if I get smote down.
Mm.
And then when I don't, I'm like, huh, I'm actually free to do whatever I like. And I don't know, whatever God, whatever force, I don't know what their response to that might be. They might find that kind of funny. I don't know.
It's a pretty good line. I like it. That's great.
Thank you.
And I'm certainly not God, but I do enjoy it a lot. After listening to your long player chat on BFM, it feels like, and listening to the album as well, it feels like it's a pretty open-ended piece. And while there are consistent themes, like the religious themes, and subject matter informed by, you know, concrete moments and experiences, you do tend to ask more questions than you probably solve. Is that fair?
Yeah, it definitely feels like there's a lot of question marks. It's a big kind of... It does feel like a lot of the music sort of surrounds a bit of a conundrum.
Mm.
And so a lot of the lyrical content and then, you know, the music supporting it are these big overarching questions that never quite get answered.
Mm.
Yeah.
Aside from the religious sort of aspect, there's a bit of a theme of existential dread, as you, like many, sort of, you know, absorb the current state of the world in crisis, and it manifests some pretty heavy emotions. Do you think that there's lots of overlap between the sort of feeling of Christian end-time eschatology and what we're living through now? Is that like a pretty a bit of a Venn diagram overlap there for you?
Maybe. I mean, I definitely grew up with this.
That rhetoric?
Yeah, this knowing of this period of time, these 7 years that would, like, all these things would happen. But it does. I in my private practice, I prefer and try to practice the practice of dreaming and hope and future worlds, and that the world ending, this feeling of the world ending is just the current world or something like this. Even though it does express itself in a lot of, like,
traumatic ways.
Yeah, like, or doom and hopelessness. And for me, music is a really amazing vehicle to get some of those really difficult to sit with feelings out in a way that is both cathartic and also beautiful and communal. Music is perfect for this, to say... To be able to put the feelings that are the hardest to deal with into these pieces, so that you're kind of they don't have to live trapped inside of you. And I don't often feel like I need to do this for the beautiful good feelings, because I love them. I don't need a vessel to, like, expel them. They just when I'm feeling gorgeous, I don't need to go and sit at the computer and be like, so maybe that just talks about where I am in my life, or like what the practice of making music is for me right now, because it is incredibly cathartic and like therapeutic, but that also means that a lot of the dark stuff ends up there.
Yeah. I want to talk about the music and talk about one production aspect that I really appreciate, vocal stacking, which there's lots of throughout this thing. And if you're not familiar with vocal stacking, dear listener, maybe you've heard an Imogen Heap or a Kelsey Lou before. They tend to do a lot of vocal stacking in their music. But you were listening to Michael Jackson vocal stacking, I heard. And vocal stacks.
Yeah, I think I was like, there were like these TikToks going around of like isolated Michael Jackson stacks of all these songs. And I was just gobsmacked. Like when I go back and look at the production of this music and look at the, you know, because I was so young when I first heard it, so kind of like, woohoo. It's just gobsmacking. And I also I didn't have a lot of stuff to make the album. I have a guitar and a Korg synth and then
and a dream.
Yeah, and a dream. So then it's like vocal stacking makes sense. Like I've got a microphone, I'm already singing. So you're like, okay, I want this to get bigger, or I want this to feel like this. What do I have in front of me? So the vocal stacking became a big part of it just because it was accessible. And I like to sing, and also I love Kelsey Lou, I love Imogen Heap. I consume a lot of music maybe that utilizes this, so it kind of just happened.
I do want to touch on your DIY sort of stuff you were saying there, because it was produced by you, recorded, written by you, it was mixed and mastered by some different people though, because a lot of the songs here are so rich with texture, the mixes are really complex. Like, you know, for instance, the cascading deep bass tones on Bright Ear. Did you have to supervise a lot of the processes for you know, finishing up and getting all the finishing touches done?
I didn't know what mixing and mastering was. And to be fair, I still don't understand what we're doing. But I sat with Patty Hill, who's an absolute master. We went and did like maybe 3.5 days, and I just sat there the whole time and kind of watched him work, and we talked it through. So we were really doing it together, but he brought a lot of ideas and, you know, was doing all kinds of things. And I was like, I don't understand, but he was really receptive because I at that point, no one had really come into it. So I was just like slowly releasing the control, and oversaw a lot of it. And then Josh with the master, he just did an amazing job. And I was like, that sounds awesome.
Oh, it does sound awesome, man. It sounds super great. I'm very happy that it's in the world now and people can hear it. Is there going to be a tour on the cards for this record?
Yeah, we'll start playing some shows. That's the next thing that I'm doing at the moment. Maybe like next month, I think, because we've just got a bit to organize. I've never really played with a band before. I've spent the last like few years playing solo, and so it's just figuring out how to interpret the album for a live set, and then we'll probably start playing a bunch.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see a show, hopefully sometime in the near future. Thank you so much for coming on the program and talking to me.
Thank you for having me. It's really nice to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise, man. Do you have any final thoughts, words, or opinions to leave our listeners with?
Happy Friday, everyone. I hope you have an amazing weekend. Let's go.
Let's go. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much, Hannah. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Cheers. That was Hannah Lynch, aka Hun Lynch, with we're talking to them about their new debut record, Sycophant, which is out wherever you find your music. We're going to play the track Post-Truth Allegory, which is a personal fave of mine. And then we'll be wrapping up the program, maybe with some news. We'll see how we go. Here's Hun Lynch with Post-Truth Allegory. You are listening to The One. Keep it freaking locked. Love you, bae.
Was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.